The man who ruled the empire called Triborough ruled it absolutely. There were other members on the boards of its four constituent public authorities, but the decisions were all his. Visiting Moses on Randall's Island one day, Cleveland Rogers rose to leave when two men came into his office, but Moses said not to bother. There was an exchange of questions and answers, a very brief exchange, after which the two men quickly departed. Asking who they were, Rogers learned that he had been sitting through a monthly meeting of the Triborough Bridge Authority. The passion that fired that man, who in 1948 celebrated his 60th birthday, was the passion that had fired that man at 30, the passion for tangible, physical accomplishment, and for the power which that accomplishment produced. And if age had not slaked his appetite for power and achievement, neither had it slaked his appetite for the means to power and achievement, work. No strictly rational explanation could account for the voraciousness of that appetite. In his early days of power, he had sloughed off all hobbies and relaxations save swimming. Now, 25 years later, he still had no other hobbies or relaxations. He still did not golf, did not play bridge, did not attend sporting events or the theater. In 1960, Ernie Clark gave him tickets to the musical comedy Fiorello. Because of its subject, Moses went, and in thanking Clark, mentioned to him that it had been the first Broadway play he had seen in years. Guests at his home can recall no single day that he spent with his family, with the two daughters he loved and the grandchildren on whom he doted, on which he did not disappear for hours into his study and shut the door behind him. He still refused to allow any of the chores that consumed chunks of other men's lives, buying clothes and getting haircuts, for example, to consume chunks of his. As she had been doing since the day she married him, Mary still ordered his socks and underwear, bought his suits, carried them home, if they weren't the correct size, took them back and brought home others, and when she got one that fit, arranged for a tailor to come to his office and make minimum alterations. When she saw he needed a haircut, had a barber brought in, and, if he was going out to dine, placed money in his pocket. If she forgot, he would have to ask his companion for a dollar or two for the waiter. He still invited friends for weekends at the rambling old house on Thompson Avenue in Babylon, went clamming with them and his family on Fire Island, was the most charming and gracious of hosts. But the more perceptive among them knew always that they were there not because of friendship, but for a purpose, and that before the weekend was over, Moses would be putting his big arm around their shoulders and working for the vote or the administrative decision that he needed from them. A quarter of a century before, he had sloughed off the last remaining amenities of life and set before himself a life that would be a feast of work. In 1958, at the age of 70, he would still be sitting before that feast with undiminished appetite. During the 1920s, Moses had established a routine under which, whenever he was living in Babylon, the chief engineer of the Long Island State Park Commission, Arthur Howland, called every morning at 7:30 at Thompson Avenue to pick up a big manila envelope bulging with the memos, letters, press releases, and directives to his executives that Moses had written since leaving the office the night before. Now, after 25 years of picking up that envelope, Howland was gone, but the envelope was still there. Every morning, without fail, Howland's successor, Sid Shapiro, would call at Thompson Avenue, and every morning, without fail, he would find it sitting there on the newel post at the bottom of the banister. "My God," says one of his secretaries, "he was a dynamo. Every morning there would be a manila envelope this thick, and six girls would be working all day to do the things he had done overnight." Working, that is, after Hazel Tappan had deciphered his handwriting, unintelligible except to his Juno-esque chief secretary.